Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Inside the red zone, Rattler was 8 of 12 last year. Inside the red zone, it makes life easier, but he gives it to Kamara, and he's into the end zone! Touchdown, Saints!
That is New Orleans Saints quarterback Spencer Rattler, who, while the team is 0-3, the numbers at least, don't look too bad for him. 4 touchdowns, just 1 pick, 67 completion percentage. I've known Rattler for a little while, Derek. He was on a Netflix documentary looking at high school quarterbacks, and he was one of those guys. Eventually, obviously, goes on to play at South Carolina, Oklahoma. But I've weirdly known Spencer Rattler for a little while.
You've known about Spencer Rattler. You
about
don't know.
Him.
You don't
I know him. I watched a documentary. I know him now. Goes by Spence.
Parasocial.
I know him.
Social.
We'll get more on the New Orleans Saints. The Bills will host them this Sunday at 1 p.m. as we are joined now on the Western Hotline, Luke Johnson of NOLA.com. Luke, thanks so much for jumping on with us this morning. How you doing?
Hey, my pleasure, fellas. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
So, I mean, right off the rip there, I mean, the Saints are 0-3. I think the expectations, you know, externally were not incredibly high for the Saints, but what have you guys that are covering the team been able to see for them for almost now the first month?
Well, you know, for the first couple of games, they kind of played how I was anticipating they'd play, which is, you know, they'd be losing some games, but they'd be playing teams pretty tight, pretty feisty. Obviously that was not the case last week. So, I'm really looking forward to just kind of figuring out exactly who this team is. Because I don't think we really have a true sense of that yet. And, you know, frankly, I'm not sure we're going to get a sense of it after this week. I don't think anybody here outside of the Saints building is, you know, giving them, you know, literally any shot. Like, that huge point spread, I think, is what about everybody feels about this game. But, look, I don't think that by the time the season's over, we're going to be talking about this as the worst team in the NFL. But I do feel like we're probably going to be getting ready for a top 10, top 5 pick at some point in the next couple months.
And, I mean, obviously that could be used for a quarterback. But as we mentioned there, you know, the clip Spencer to Kamara, you know, what has Rattler looked like? I think for many people the expectation was, especially after the second round pick, that it would be Tyler Shuck that starts the season. That has not been the case at all.
Yeah, you know, I think – maybe some of the outside perception of Spencer Rattler coming into the season was really based off of what he did last year as a rookie. And yeah, that was a really tough evaluation for him. People had no reason to watch the Saints last year. They were incredibly boring. And after that first two games of the season, they started off really hot. They went in the tank really quickly. But when Spencer played last year, it was like he was playing in the fourth quarter of a preseason game. It was like the guys he was playing with. They had so many injuries last year. They ran through like 13 or 14 starting offensive line combinations. Their best two receivers went out after week 6 and week 8. Alvin Kamara didn't play for a chunk of last year. It was like he was playing with the JV roster. So it was really, really hard to get an evaluation of him last year. You got some glimpses of what he could do, but you know, it looked bad because he was playing with a bad team. I think he's come in this year a more confident player who learned from that experience last year with a pretty good offensive play caller in Kellen Moore and a better set of weapons around him. And I think he's kind of shown that he's much better than what people thought. The part this year that I'm still, I still think at some point we're going to see Tyler Shuck starting for this team. Like, they got to see what they have in him, especially if they continue losing. because they could be right back in the quarterback thing next year. With Spencer, I mean, if he's going to hold off and stay in the starting lineup, like he's got to win games. He has not done that yet as a pro. You know, you can argue whether quarterback wins are a stat or not, but fact of the matter is the Saints are 0-9 in games he started. To me, he's got to connect on some shots downfield. They have one player on the entire roster right now averaging better than 10 yards catch. And it's their second string tight end.
Yeah, that's something I want to jump in on. I do want to ask about Kellen Moore, but you mentioned the receivers there. Chris Olave, at least against Seattle, but I mean, really throughout the year, 10 catches for 57 yards. I'm like, how does that even happen, Luke? Like, what happened? What's going on there?
Yeah, I think part of it is Kellen wants, he's got a young quarterback, right? Yeah, we just got done talking about that. They're missing some pieces on the offensive line. I think his idea for this offense is you kind of like think about the really good Warriors teams of the past in the NBA. Mm-hmm. They're making layups and three pointers, right? So he wants to do a bunch of quick passing game. He wants to get the ball to his playmakers, use that as an extension of the run game, and then when he can, take his shots. Problem is, they haven't been able to take any shots. Yeah. They haven't connected on any of them. I think Spencer's like 3 of 13 on passes that travel 20 yards downfield. The intermediate passing game is just like not there. So all they're doing is they're connecting on a lot of short, easy throws. And yeah, part of that is because teams are playing the too high shell on them. Like that sits there. When you look at this offense, you see Chris Olave, you see Rashid Shaheed and the two fast guys. And it's, when they were going good last year, they were connecting on a bunch of bombs downfield and all that stuff. But like, yeah, at the same time, you got to see something more than what they're doing right now, because it's just not working. Teams are like, yeah, you can try to put together 15 play drives all you want, but they haven't really succeeded in the red zone. And when you're taking away the explosive aspect of this offense, it makes it a lot harder on an inexperienced unit. So I just don't know when that's going to change, but I feel like something's kind of got to give there, because you're really not taking advantage of your best players if Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed are averaging like 8-9 yards a catch.
And looking to the future here with the rest of this season, Luke, you mentioned how they'll probably end up throwing Tyler Shuck in at some point this year. But it does look like I've always been fascinated with Mickey Loomis's tenure as the Saints general manager. And it does look like over these past couple of years, this has been the price to pay for almost kicking the cap tax down the road to try to stay relevant in seasons past.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with you on that. I think to me, it's like that plays a big part in it. And then they also whiffed on some guys. And some guys who, you know, I think they made good decisions on in the moment to extend, didn't pan out after the extension. You know, they signed Michael Thomas to a 5-year, $100 million deal when that was a big, big contract for a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. He sets the NFL record for receptions in the first year of that deal, and then plays like 8 games for the rest of it. Ryan Ramczyk signs a big deal as a right tackle, highest paid right tackle in the NFL, and develops chronic knee problems. You know, Marshawn Lattimore hurt over and over and over again after the extension. And then, you know, they decide to try to extend or to keep Marcus Davenport instead of Trey Hendrickson miss. You know, these draft classes where they're swinging and missing on guys like Peyton Turner and Trevor Penning and you know, the list goes on. I think it goes a lot deeper than the kicking the cap down the road. It's like pretty much every turn the decision backfired on him. And then, you know, then when you don't have production out of the guys you're paying top of the market, that's when your depth gets really exposed. So I think it plays a big part of it, but there's a lot more to it, in my opinion, just as somebody who's been around covering this team for a long time.
Right. And again, Loomis has been the general manager there for 23 years. Is there any sort of temperature on what the potential end of that tenure might be looking like?
If you were to ask the fan base, they would say they hope it's boiling. But I think it's a unique situation here. with Mickey Loomis as the general manager and his role with his franchise going forward. I don't think it's as simple here as it is in a lot of places where you're talking about, like, you know, you're not producing, so let's get you out of the building. Because you know, there's just a lot that goes into this. You know, Tom Benson was the owner here for a long time. He brought Mickey in, and Mickey was part of the inner circle. You know, Mickey is still part of that, like, their plan. Like, he's de facto written into the will, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's plans in place for Mickey Loomis to have a role within this organization beyond his time as GM. So, like, I think it's not as simple as your record hasn't been good enough, like you're ousted. Yeah, I think it's got to be like, if he is not going to be in that role, you know, it's going to be he's pushed into like an advisory role where he's still playing a part in the organization, but somebody else is calling the shots. That I think might be possible. But I think that would not be a willing move on Mickey Loomis's part. And this is all just kind of based on vibes, really. Yeah, you know, we've been asking Mickey about this for 4 or 5 years now, and he's just kind of steadfastly refused to even really acknowledge the idea of stepping down. So I can tell you that the fan base here is definitely ready for it. He's in some extremely hot water with them because they're kind of tired of the losing.
Luke Johnson of NOLA.com here on the Wester Hotline. Luke, I did mention, I mean, we asked about Mickey Loomis there. Now to their rookie head coach, Kellen Moore, who he's young, 37. He's already, though, before being the Saints head coach, had three stops as an offensive coordinator, some varying in terms of success. But he has been kind of just like a pinnacle in football for years. If you're a college fan, you know him for having like 50 wins and three losses at Boise State. And then really immediately after his playing career ended, he got into coaching and was quite successful at it. What's been the feeling of the initial hiring from the fan base and now through three games?
Yeah, I think the fan base is a little skeptical at first. It's really hard to argue with the resume. You know, he coordinated four top 10 offenses in 6 years as an offensive coordinator, play caller. Yeah, obviously he's coming off the Super Bowl run. He's a guy who has managed to adapt his scheme to his personnel wherever he's gone. And really, the only times he hasn't been successful is when they had quarterback injuries. I think the skepticism came on. You know, he's not like the stereotypical like rah rah head coach. Like, he's not Dan Campbell. He's like the antithesis of Dan Campbell. But from just like a football mind standpoint, I think he's got it. We'll see if he has like the head coach mm-hmm. side of things, right? Like there's been plenty of offensive coordinators who flamed out as head coaches, plenty more defensive coordinators who flamed out as head coaches. Really, it's just, to me, it's going to be about, can he get the quarterback situation figured out? Because I think the Saints are, for as much as they've kicked the can down the road, they're set up pretty well in the future. You know, all these contracts come off the books in like 2027. They're going to have a lot of cap space then. Yeah, they're going to have good draft picks to rebuild the core foundation of this roster. So, I think he's the right guy to get it done. We'll see on that. We're only three games in. Yeah, last week was really bad, but I went back and looked yesterday. You know, Dan Campbell's first year, they started 0-8, and the eighth loss is a 44-6 loss to a 2-5 Philadelphia Eagles team. You know, like, this sort of stuff happens with rookie head coaches. They still can get out of it and make something really great out of their organization. So I'm going to be patient even after that pretty ugly performance last week. And I think he's got the goods.
You did call it, Luke. I saw the article, the Murphy's Law, the embodiment of Murphy's Law on a field. I found that very interesting about the last game there with New Orleans.
Yeah. It was bad. For your listeners who don't know what Murphy's Law is, it's anything that can go wrong will go wrong, right? Yep. It was pre-snap penalties. It was failures on offense, special teams. It was poor coaching decisions. It was everything, man. It was 10 minutes into that game, they're down 21-0. They've had a punt blocked. They've had another return for a touchdown. They've had a false start on a tush push. Yeah, it was incredibly ugly. this is my eighth season covering the NFL, and I've seen some bad losses. I've seen, you know, a team that was, that had like three quarters of the team out with COVID, you know, get absolutely shellacked on Monday night, and that was probably the worst thing I've seen on a football field. It was really, really bad.
It's like at a certain point you kind of just have to laugh at it and just move on.
Yeah, no, and for me, I mean, I got to start writing my game story I wrote that line in the first quarter of that game. I was done with it by the third quarter. Yep. So, it was bad. But like, I do think though that like, yeah, crap like that happens.
Yeah.
In the NFL, you know, I don't expect them to be super competitive this week. But like, look, the Green Bay Packers were world beaters for 2 weeks, and they just lost to like a pretty feckless Cleveland Browns team this past weekend. So like literally anything can happen in the NFL, but yeah, I just hope I don't have to go sit through too many more of those this year. It's hard to come up with angles this week.
I mean, last time New Orleans was here in Buffalo, I probably would say that the Bills had the Murphy's Law side of that game. The last time Saints were here in Buffalo, that was a streaker had more rushing yards than the Bills had yards in that game.
Yep.
So we've all seen it. We've all lived through it. But I do find that noteworthy of like, it's the first time in 8 years, and it is very interesting to see where the two franchises have been since the last time they've been in Buffalo.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that should be, for any fan of any football team, you know, maybe with the exception of the Chicago Bears, I don't know if they finally got it figured out, but like, you know, it's like you go through these really, really rough patches and periods where your team is just completely hopeless and everything sucks. And then you get a Josh Allen and everything looks pretty great after that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just say it's the type of league where things can change in a hurry. I don't think it's going to change too much this week.
Right. So, I feel bad. We were talking a little bit about that before we brought you on of like, man, what are we going to learn the next few weeks? I mean, these teams maybe aren't going to stack up, but, it is still the NFL. You mentioned Cleveland and Green Bay. Luke, I do have one other question for you, and this is much more for my morbid curiosity as a college football fan.
Uh-oh.
The offense coordinator for the New Orleans Saints is Doug Nussmeier. His son is Garrett Nussmeier, the quarterback at LSU. Is there a clamoring in New Orleans to maybe draft him, or is that kind of just me in Buffalo not understanding what's going on in New Orleans?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always going to be a clamoring here in this city for them to draft LSU players, and it was like a huge frustration for a long time. It seemed like they just refused to do it forever. But I don't know if that one would be. I think Nuss has kind of got to get some stuff ironed out here. Meaning his son Garrett. Mm-hmm. He's been kind of hit or miss these first couple of weeks, and I think a lot of people were thinking like, hey, maybe he could be the guy. You know, everybody was excited about Arch Manning because he's a New Orleans kid, and then you know he flamed out in week one. And everybody's like, okay, let's get on the Nuss bus here, and then that hasn't looked so good. So yeah, I don't know. I think that if he kind of gets things turned around to where he plays a lot more like he did last year, you'll see a lot of that in the lead up to the draft next year. I definitely do think the Saints are going to be in the quarterback market next year. But I do think that like it's cooled a little bit here over the last couple of weeks as he's kind of gotten off to a slow start.
Yeah. Most of the big time quarterbacks, it felt like, have gotten off to very slow starts.
But, yeah, you know,
we'll see how that keeps going
for next year. I was like,
right.
I was like, hey, this is gonna be my first time being in like the full like real quarterback draft thing. Like, let's go! I'm excited for this, and I'm watching all these guys in week one. I'm like, Arch Manning, no. Cade Klubnik, hell no. Lenora Sellers, maybe not. it's been kind of a rough go.
We're on to Mendoza in Indiana. We're on to Mendoza in Indiana.
We're on to Mendoza. Yeah, we're following the Mendoza line. That's right.
Luke, thanks so much for jumping on with us. Are you coming up to Buffalo for the game, or are you staying in New Orleans?
I am. This is being my first trip to Buffalo, my second to last stop on the NFL circuit. So I'm very, very much looking forward to it.
And you're coming in at a good time. Like, it's not going to be any sort of
harsh
weather.
We've had good weather.
It's going to be decent at least.
No, you guys, I like that you're trying to convince me of this, but I'm so mad that it's not going to be like 50 degrees there. I've been like living in the night. It's been like 90 here for like 6 months already. I'm tired of going to 70s. Okay.
Right. You hear 75, you're like, that's barely anything. Come on.
At least it'll be cooler. I'll get like, there's that. But we hope you're at least able to enjoy your time here and enjoy the food here. I mean, New Orleans is New Orleans with its market and how the food is down there. But we've got our ways.
Oh, my good friend Catherine Fitzgerald is going to show me around.
Oh, there you go. You're in good company.
Yep, you're in good hands. Yeah, there you go.
K-Fist is going to give me a good time.
Yeah, all right, Luke, enjoy your trip up here, and thanks for jumping on with us, man.
Thanks, guys.
Luke Johnson there on the Western Hotline of NOLA.com. I really liked his Mickey Loomis answer. I really liked
I had to ask that follow-up. I'm like, okay, he followed up on the kicking in the can thing that I really have remembered over the last couple of years. I'm like, this is the price they're paying. Once he followed up with, there have been draft misses, there have been contract misses, I'm like, what's the temperature like there? And I was very surprised by that answer because as an outsider, Mickey Loomis needs to go. It's been 23 years. What do you, at this point, like, clearly it's gone stale. And I had even mentioned he should be wearing it that the Saints had gone 7-9 five times with Drew Brees at quarterback. To hear that answer is almost jarring. It kind of gives me a little kick back to a certain hockey team.
Well, I think also you realize maybe there are more teams like that in sports.
Right.
Like we make fun of the Steelers for basically never firing anybody, but New Orleans kind of has it. I've mentioned I've watched the Dallas Cowboys documentary. Tex Ram and Tom Landry were basically in those jobs for nearly 30 years. Like, and they had really rough runs there at the end. Sometimes it is just like, hey, you're kind of a staple of the organization. It is what it is. And look, to be perfectly honest, look how the Bills are right now. I'm not saying Sean McDermott's going to be the head coach for 30 years. Maybe Brandon Bean's the general manager for 20 years. It's worked. The Bills are very relevant. That might be in the Bills' future. I don't think it's one many of us have thought about, the real post-Allen of, you know, the 5 to 10 years after that, because that's, you know, very far in the future. But that might also be in the Bills' future. Why would we get rid of these guys?
It also is a little bit of the harsh reality of the NFL, too, of like Luke mentions, we're gearing up for looking at, you know, a top 10, maybe top 5 pick. The bottom of the NFL has been so bad that you cannot guarantee New Orleans top 5 pick.
No.
And last year, New Orleans was 5-12. They're not in the top 5 with a 5-win season.
Yeah, and you're seeing that maybe more through now magnifying glass in the AFC. The top of the AFC is great.
It is top heavy.
But the bottom of the AFC is almost unwatchable.
It's fighting for scraps.
Jacksonville, who is what, 1-2? Jacksonville's 1-2 or 2-1?
They're 2-1.
They're 2-1. So that even makes this point more. And Houston's 0-3. Derek, that game was unwatchable. They were both laughably bad. And it looked like two teams that were unprepared, not focused. The game plan was bad.
Look at the division.
Mm-hmm.
Miami.
The division in particular. The division.
The Jets. Both are at 0-3. The Giants sitting at 0-3, now making a quarterback change. And then there's also Tennessee, where Cam Ward looks interesting, but that roster is barren.
I think Callahan also is not a head coach.
Yeah, that's also a bad head coach. Like, at least maybe they have a piece there in Kellen Moore with New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that with Callahan and Tennessee. So, again, New Orleans already has competition. Within the AFC, there are 4-0-3 teams like the Saints' record.
And it doesn't help either that, I mean, we mentioned there with Luke right at the end, but the quarterback class, the whole expectation of this was that there might be 4 or 5 first-round quarterbacks.
And you have been talking with me a lot about this off-air.
And I was very excited about it because I was like, this will be great for the Bills, who were hoping draft from 30 to 32. Great, there's going to be some good talent that probably shouldn't be there because a team reached for a quarterback, what have you.
Or a team trading back into the first round.
For a quarterback, right.
And they give you next year's first round pick, for example. Mm-hmm. Or they give you a heavy price just to move up 4 spots. And you've got a high second round pick, kind of like how they played the Coleman situation. And it's for a quarterback. It doesn't look like that this year.
And instead now I would say this. It's
the
up
Purdue
in the
guy
air.
In me had the eye like twitch when you mentioned an Indiana player.
Mendoza? Mendoza's awesome. But that's the thing. It's sort of up in the air. The initial names are not firing on all cylinders, but Carson Beck at Miami looks very good. Dante Moore at Oregon looks very good. I mentioned Mendoza at Indiana might now be the Heisman favorite after John Mateer is going to undergo thumb surgery at Oklahoma. So maybe this is going to turn around. I'm just not holding my breath because literally all of the big-name quarterbacks, and I include that as a hook'em, you know, all of the big name quarterbacks really not look good at all this year.
Right.
And if anything, their programs have looked dreadful. Clemson and South Carolina especially.
It is fascinating. And again, I really loved what Luke had to say about Mickey Loomis, though, because I've always been fascinated about his tenure.
Mm-hmm.
And now even more so. If he's not yeeted out, like the team wins like what, maybe like 3 or 4 games? I don't know, man. Like, it's really, and again, the fan base, once you've had 23 years of a guy and you wasted several years of Drew Brees' career, that's already indictable enough.
Yeah, you're, and that's the thing. Most fan bases, and this is not a shot at them. I mean, it's the truth of it, won't have nearly as much patience as the people in the room. And yeah, when you mentioned, like, when you wasted prime years of Drew Brees, when you ultimately didn't get back to another Super Bowl with that core group, the patience is going to be at an all-time low. And now you might be the worst run team, quote unquote, worst run team in the sport in terms of the optics. It's not ideal. 803-0550, the number to call. Did mention a quarterback switch there. I want to jump into that. Jackson Dart getting his first start. Russell Wilson only makes 3 weeks. We'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Jackson Dart was ready. The inside the building, I know there is overwhelming excitement to put him on the field. He really impressed in training camp. In the small bits we've seen on the field, he has been productive. At some point, Giants would have loved just wait a couple weeks, get through the tough part of the schedule. Could not do it anymore. Have to play Jackson Dart. Brian Daboll informing both quarterbacks today that the future is now for the New York Giants.
Ian Rapoport talking there. The big news from yesterday, it only took 3 games, and the Giants are like, nope, Russell Wilson, you're out. Jackson Dart, you are in.
Context matters, and that's always something we try to live by at this point. Right, Zach? Context matters. Russell.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wilson had thrown for 450 yards in week 2 against Dallas. But the man played so poorly against Kansas City. In a game that was, it was winnable. You had a chance. But Wilson, that sequence in that red zone scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'd be scared of asking Wilson to pass the salt for me because it's going to go 15 feet over my head. But he airmails one. To airmail it out of the back of the end zone on 4th and goal.
Yeah, that's a
crime against football. And there's no easy part of the Giants' schedule to put Jackson Dart in.
No, funny enough, the easiest game until you're like at the end of the year. It's funny enough, against the Saints. The problem is it's on the road after the Chargers. That's their next game, at the Saints. But then it's Philadelphia and Denver and Philadelphia again.
Yeah, it just – I am worried that Dart might be coming in a little too quickly with a team that might not be that good. But then you look at the Dallas game, for example. And you're like, okay, they have flashes of promise.
I think there is talent there. I think Russell Wilson – And what's funny
and
is
even
is,
then, there's talent sometimes in Russell Wilson. The man put up a career high in passing yards with the New York Giants.
And that's the thing is, it is funny how this happened, but I also think that's how teams kind of feel about the Dallas defense, which is...
It has a lot more to say about Dallas' defense.
I think it has a lot more to say there. Really, he was doing well in that game just throwing up moonballs and just praying that Wandell Robinson or Malik Nabers came down with them. And they did a lot against Dallas. And then they didn't against the Chiefs. And if you get to a point where your quarterback can't get what? The first target to Malik Nabers until the third quarter, maybe even a little bit later, I think that's when it's time to pull the plug. Dart, as a rookie, probably just through to sheer ignorance of not knowing really what's going on because it's his first NFL start, mm-hmm. will probably find number one.
Yes.
Purely off of, I know he's awesome and I need to get the ball out quick. There is something to that of the rookie will probably just get the ball to the best guys. You hope it's accurate. You hope he makes some of the right decisions. And some of that is not always correct. I mean, Justin Jefferson fantasy owners will understand that with J.J. McCarthy,
right?
Who really had one good quarter through two games. Now he's hurt with a high ankle sprain. We'll see about Dart. I will say, though, he comes in having 3 full years of starts at Ole Miss in the SEC, very successful years as well, and he seemed to progressively get better and better as his career went on, ultimately culminating, no, not with a playoff appearance, but with over 4,000 yards in college, 29 touchdowns, almost 70% completion percentage, and he did look good in the preseason. I just, for me, and I'll always get here, and sometimes it is not the correct way to go about it, sometimes it absolutely is, but I will always lean into starting the young guys faster than maybe normal, maybe more than you'd want to, because you'll find out. You'll see what the issues are. You'll see what you got to fix. They'll get game reps, and they'll get better. To a certain extent, it's like Deion Sanders, although with Shador, it's a little rough, but I actually kind of agree with him on this, at least with quarterbacks. I didn't learn much, you know, sitting on the bench. Like, I learned playing, and some quarterbacks, no, you do sit on the bench. Aaron Rodgers probably is not the Aaron Rodgers we know if he doesn't sit for, what, 2-3 years behind Brett Favre. You know, Allen has credited his injury and sitting for, what, 3-4 weeks behind Derek Anderson and just seeing how the game went. But he had also some starts before that. He kind of knew what he had to work on.
The plan was for Allen to really sit a lot. And then it was Peterman starts, and it's so poor that they have to put Allen in right away. And it messes up the entire development plan, kind of. But I will say, it's cruel, but it's also going to help in the long run here that Jackson Dart plays the Eagles twice next month.
It's going to hurt, but
it's twice in 3 weeks, but then ready? After that, life gets better. The 49ers are banged up to hell. They don't have Nick Bosa this year. The Bears, you could probably make some plays against the Bears. Then the Packers, of course, and, you know, that got a little tougher. Same with the Lions again. But then Patriots, Commanders, Vikings, that one's tough. Raiders, Cowboys to end the year. So the end of the year is a little bit more forgiving for a rookie quarterback. It's just absolutely brutal that he has to show up to a 3 week span of Eagles, Broncos, Eagles.
Yeah, that's not it. And that's the thing, too. The Broncos, their offense has been sputtering. They're 1-2. Bo Nix has not looked great in his second year. The defense is still phenomenal. That defense is still incredible. I think a lot of this also, that they waited to maybe put Jackson Dart in, Andrew Thomas. They wanted to get their all-pro left tackle back mm-hmm. in the lineup and have him had played a game, and now I think they feel more comfortable throwing him in there. But that Sunday night game was really bad to watch. And there is that level of hate watching. Of course, being Bills fans, we're watching Kansas City. We want them to lose. But there is also that painful level of hate watching, seeing another team that you're sitting there going, if this was our team, we would have capitalized on all these mistakes. We would have blown them out. And yet you're watching a bad football team, and they're just unable to do anything. There were so many points, especially in the first half, where Kansas City is just unable to move the ball down the field. They look broken. They look awful.
Right.
But New York somehow looks worse.
New York somehow looks worse. And then you also remember, though, that 450-yard game that Wilson has, though, he puts up a prayer ball
mm-hmm.
and loses them the football game.
That's exactly right. I mean, they lose that game because he just chucks up another moon ball and his guys don't come down with it. It's instead an interception.
It's a miss.
Yeah.
It goes way too far infield. If it stays on the sideline, there's actually a decent chance of at least at worst an incompletion. But it goes to the middle of the field. Safety's able to just get under it, comfortably catch it, and Malik Nabers has to make a tackle instead. I never truly understood the idea of having Russell Wilson as their starting quarterback, because Wilson probably wanted to have an opportunity to be more of a full season starter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's his aim. And then you draft a quarterback, and everyone knew you were going to be drafting a quarterback at some point. It just wasn't going to be at pick 3. Or 4. Was it 4?
I think Abdul Carter was 4.
Yes. Sorry. Forgive me for that one. No, it was 3. Abdul Carter was 3rd.
Was it Mason Graham 4?
Yes.
4 or 5? Yeah.
No, Will Campbell was 4.
But,
Mason
so,
Graham was 5.
Yeah. Top 3.
But anyway, I look at it and go, yeah, like signing Jameis Winston made sense at the time. Like, that makes sense, because if you're going to draft a rookie quarterback, you've got Winston, he'll play a couple of games, it'll be pure chaos, you'll learn what not to do, and then you go from there. And the man is as supportive as a teammate as any you can possibly imagine, apparently.
But you might also win some of those games.
You might also win one
with
of those
with
games.
How your defenses were able to perform, both against, I mean, the Dallas game, maybe not. And you ultimately lose that game. Your defense gives up a lot of points. It's a track meet. It's a really fun watch as a neutral fan. But Washington week one, you lose that game 21-6.
And you look wholly uninspiring. And Wilson has one game, and it says more about Dallas than it does about the Giants in any way. But the other part of it is how outwardly the rest of the quarterback room is. And then there's Russell Wilson. And it's like, that seems like it didn't make much sense. And I get it. You want to try to win games. You want to save jobs, everything, this, that, and the other. But Wilson is not that player anymore, and it is continuing to be proven.
I wonder
what they're going to do with him now, though, because...
Oh, I mean, yeah, I think he's just going to sit on the bench. They've got two vets now, which is going to be weird. It's going to be after the season, I think, something happens. I just, with Wilson especially, I've just never seen a clear Hall of Fame trajectory, his Seattle career, be extinguished so fast and so, like, suddenly and so aggressively than his times with Denver, Pittsburgh, and New York. I mean, just flat out, like, for him, I don't think he's going into the Hall anymore. There's been too much now of his career where he's been an objectively bad quarterback. He has not been good.
I don't know. His career in Seattle is long enough that I think that he'll be fine. He'll end up in the Hall. It's not going to be right away, though. It will take time, because he does have a Super Bowl win. That is something to his favor. He also was Seattle's quarterback for 8 years. Excuse me, 9 years. 9 full seasons as Seattle's quarterback, and he was among the best to do it in that time. So I do think he'll make the Hall of Fame. However, you are right about this. These last 4 years now have made it painful to watch because of how sharp and sudden that crash was. And also, it makes an interesting case of, okay, how great were you really?
Well, and that's why I wonder, like, how many of these voters, when he eventually does retire, will sit there and go, I think we saw the real Russell Wilson away from one of the better rosters of the 2010s in the Legion of Boom that was built so perfectly for him with the run game with Mark. And that's the thing, too. A lot of his early career was they were defense and run game with Russell making a few big plays. We only really saw the let Russ cook moment. It's probably about 2.5-3 years. That is, like, really that's the movement, that's the moment where why isn't he getting an MVP, what the hell, like, all this stuff.
Yeah, it's really 2019, 2020.
And then it does now be that probably a lot of his former teammates won't campaign for him.
Yeah.
The Legion of Boom openly does not like him, or at least it maybe has been a few years.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Openly didn't love being his teammate once they all left.
Yeah.
And then, like, how much Pete Carroll really seemed to favor Wilson.
Yeah, it is going to be an interesting study to see, at least. I do think that there is enough there that he makes the Hall of Fame. But like you said, the campaigning thing probably doesn't help. Like, not having teammates really in your corner will not help. And these past 4 years have just been, it's a tough watch.
It's a real tough watch. There's been blips. Dallas, right? There was blips his second year in Denver. But for the most part, it has been, you find out he's really not a great teammate. You kind of have to run a very certain offense with him. Once he couldn't move, he really became quite bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's a sad way for his career to end because of the high highs in Seattle, where he really did kind of change how people were able to look at the position. 5'11", but a stocky guy that could throw a beautiful deep ball and can move around. I mean, he somewhat changed how people were able to look at the position. You didn't have to be this big guy. He was a third-round pick mainly due to his size out of Wisconsin. And immediately he was up there as one of the best rookies we'd ever seen. 26 touchdowns, I think 10 picks. He was great.
That Matt Flynn contract looking terrible right away.
And Matt Flynn, greatest backup quarterback performance ever. That Week 17 game against Detroit where he threw like 6 touchdown passes at home. Beautiful. But yeah, it's a sad end for his career, and I think this is probably it. I don't think another team's going to bring him in to be a starter. I just don't.
Absolutely not.
803-0550, the number to call. Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. Also, Bills head coach Sean McDermott will be speaking with the media as we get the week underway for the Bills. You can follow all of Sal's updates there over on Twitter, at Sal Sports, for the latest. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it in Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer with you here. Tom Pelissero tweeted out a story now, essentially. 128 modern era players nominated for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2026. Some fun names on here. We were just looking through real quick. You're talking Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. Will he ever get in the Hall of Fame? Quarterbacks, there's been 10 named. Few of them make complete sense. Drew Brees leads that list. Then it kind of gets real interesting. I know Sneaky Joe has his fight against Eli Manning. I think he'll eventually get in due to the 2 Super Bowls. Philip Rivers is much more of the stats accumulation, the high highs for him. But you also have names on here like Alex Smith and Rich Gannon and Jake DeLome. And it's like, oh, man, I don't know about some of these.
I loved Jake DeLome on the Panthers. Why is he on this list? Nothing against – I don't want to say nothing against Jake DeLome, because this is clearly against Jake DeLome. But, like, man, I liked watching Jake DeLome as a Panther.
He had about 2 good years.
It was more like 5 or 6.
Mm.
But even then, it's only 5 or 6.
Yeah, he only hits 20 touchdowns, or over 20 touchdowns twice.
Which is why we even did the Russell Wilson conversation here a little bit. He was at least there for a while. And he was good for that for his entirety of his Seattle career. And it's 10 years. So there's something there.
There's something there.
There's merit to that. And even then, I am kind of leaning back toward you. When we were talking over the break, yeah, maybe Wilson might not make it after all. The Super Bowl win helps. That's something Jake DeLome does not have. Thanks, right. Patriots. Like, come on. We don't need to do this.
The Gannon one is a fun...
Gannon's a fun one.
Mainly because his career only got interesting after he was 34 years old.
Yeah.
Obviously it's with the Raiders. He wins an MVP. He's got a 4,000-yard passing season in there. He makes a Super Bowl, like the whole thing.
Yeah.
But he was pretty much a career backup or even just a spot starter for much of the early parts of his career. And then with just the Raiders, the light flipped on.
This will be interesting to look at going through it, through the eventuality.
Yeah, we only got to the quarterbacks. I did see Sean Alexander's name for the running backs. And I was like, yes, but I don't know if that's going to end up happening. That'll do it for us today. We'll be back on tomorrow. Coming up next, though, after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash.
Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.